episode 16 of Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat, and every Monday I publish a new episode with a different climate champion as my guest. We talk about the future, the past, and why climate change mitigation is critical. My guest this week is Chris Tumpach, co-founder, president, and CEO of Rainforest Automation. Chris leveraged his background in software, semiconductor, hardware, and web product development to found and grow Rainforest Automation with minimal outside funding into a leading player in the consumer, utility, and solar energy markets. Their solutions provide residential power optimization by transforming consumer IoT devices into operational resources for energy providers. They connect the smart home with the smart grid, from energy storage to smart meters. In fact, for many years now, I've had one of their monitoring devices connected to my modem at home and leveraging the Zigbee protocol. I'm able to view my real-time energy consumption. Yes, I am an energy nerd. I even know what Zigbee means. Matthew, it's time for the Climate Champions Learn a Term segment. What do you think Zigbee protocol is?
Hey, Lee wanted me to tell you all about the Zigbee protocol because it's extremely important in the context of climate change. As you all know, the bees have been harmed greatly by climate change. Bees used to zig and zag as they went from flower to flower to get pollen. But now they've lost their zag. They can only zig. So the Zigbee protocol is the attempt that we're trying to make to get climate change under control to protect the bees. Think of the honey. Think of the honey.
Matthew, I think that definition might be better than the actual definition. I'm from a family with three boys. I'm the oldest, and Jeremy, who's been on other podcasts, is the youngest. Matthew is the middle child. To meet another of Matthew's varied personalities, visit his alter ego, CK, at CK's Kitchen channel on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for CK's Kitchen channel, and you'll find some great recipes made by CK, who's pretty much every guy Matthew and I grew up with in Brooklyn. And it's very funny. Matthew, Zigbee is actually a wireless language. Think Bluetooth, that home devices can use to connect and communicate to one another. Your computer and phone probably communicate to your car or your headphones using Bluetooth, but some energy products use Zigbee instead. Back in the mid-2000s, Zigbee came out on top as the technology to put in electric meters so that they could be a part of a HAN. That's a home area network, but don't get me started. I've been getting some positive feedback about the Learn a Term segment, but I'd like to know what you think. So visit my Twitter account at Lee Krivat and retweet the tweet for this episode, episode 16 with Chris Tumpach. And in your retweet, tell me if you want to keep the segment or not and use hashtag Learn a Term. That's at Lee Krivat, retweet episode 16 with hashtag Learn a Term and let me know what you think. Chris, thank you so much for the advice on what to explore while I was in Vancouver, Canada. I had a great time. And now, James Henry Bedell, take it away. Welcome to Climate Champions. This is Lee Krivat. I'm here with Chris Tumpach, president and CEO of Rainforest Automation. Welcome to Climate Champions.
Great, thanks for inviting me.
So with regard to climate change mitigation, can you talk about a meaningful moment in your life that pushed you into that direction?
Yeah, you know, that's very interesting. I'm a relatively young father right now. I have a five-year-old and a three-year-old at home. So, and we've been planning kids for years before that. And as I was looking forward to where we're going with technology and different things, I thought to myself, well, you know, some of this home automation stuff is interesting, but what if I could have this technology help my children's future, really, and help drive changes that have meaningful impact? And it was really in thinking of that future and what I'm going to be leaving behind for them that drove me to focus my business more intently on changing what we can do with respect to energy and therefore affect climate change.
That's great. Are there other personal reasons that you want to make a difference?
Yeah, you know, I've always been a little bit of a green heart inside. You know, I've always biked to work, and it's not because I necessarily think that that's me, myself, I'm going to make a difference, but it's something I think a lot of people can enjoy and has a potential impact on what's happening. And so I think it's just, I felt climate change in many aspects of my life. For example, I love skiing, and I've just seen the effects of climate change in the last decade change the sport to the point where you have to be looking at weather forecasts every day and planning a month ahead of what might happen to see if that's even a viable thing. 20 years from now, will I be able to ski here at Whistler? I actually don't know if I have an answer to that. So it's not only things that are important to me from a family perspective, but even personal things that I enjoy, I see potentially being affected by climate change.
When you meet people that don't understand climate change or don't believe in it, do you have a way to talk about it, to try to convince them that it's something they should maybe take seriously?
You know, it's interesting. I think through a single conversation, trying to change somebody's opinion on something is challenging. But I think it's a matter of just having a simple, open discussion. So let's take, for example, a recent discussion I had with somebody who works in Alberta, in the oil sands and the petroleum industry. When I had that discussion 5 years ago around, you know, that this is eventually going to be a dying industry, has a lot of climate effects, it was perceived differently. It was perceived like I didn't want that business to succeed. And I said, well, look, you know, 20 years from now, it just won't make economic sense. It's starting not to make economic sense now, right? And what I've seen over that course of the 5 years is now the conversation's at least a little bit more pragmatic, to the point that, yes, there's acceptance that there is this end coming, that this just doesn't make economic sense, and that, yes, I guess that would also benefit the environment, right? So a lot of times in my arguments around climate change, I'm changing the topic to not try to evangelize the environmental aspect to start, but let's start with simple economics.
Well, the economic part is only there because of the environmental impact. Otherwise, we wouldn't have invested the money into other forms of energy.
Right, and I agree with that, in that, yes, there has been investments up till now, which I think that's what's making me really think about it. Okay, we've made these investments. Oh, now we've actually triggered that economic change, right? And made it, you know, if you were to take all the investments to put in the petrochemical petroleum industries and look at all the renewable side of things, and we're to actually equalize that, we're now on equal footings economically. So the fact that you can just tell somebody, okay, now there's all these natural disasters coming. You're seeing them every day. Did you remember those ones when you were a kid? No. Do you think that's happening just because you're reading the news more? Probably not, right? You can feel these impacts on a daily basis. And I think there's that, those impacts are becoming more personal to people from these disasters that are becoming more common. And if you couple that with the economic things, and now you can start bringing in some of the environmental conversation into it, I think you're able to at least get people to not see it now as a threat. And I think that's the first step to convincing somebody around climate change. It's not a threat to their livability. It's something that's actually going to benefit them if they think about it from a different perspective.
There's many, many companies, many, many jobs now in the climate change mitigation field. I think it's the big growth engine of a lot of economies now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but I remember looking at the stats around how many people were working in the coal mining industry versus how many people were installing solar panels on people's roofs. And the numbers were staggering. So if you're looking at any sort of jobs, economic impact or whatever, these are all things that have just make sense, right?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I generate another 2,000 jobs from people putting panels on somebody's roof versus generating 500 jobs for a coal miner, right?
There's this company, Pi Energy. I interviewed them on an earlier episode of Climate Champions. They're talking about taking it down another 80%, like the cost of solar.
Right.
So I don't think technology is done yet.
No, and that's what I feel is quite exciting. I feel like we're kind of at the early cusp where it's all making sense now to just do the right thing. Within the next 10 years, it'll totally not make sense to do what we're doing today in the general thing as far as driving fossil fuel vehicles and whatnot.
Tell me about rainforest automation and how it connects to climate change and why it's super exciting.
Yeah, so at a very high level, rainforest automation, we kind of connect the smart home with the smart grid. And really what we try to do is to engage customers on their energy usage, if they're interested, so they can see how much power they're using in real time. And from that, the studies we've done have cut people's power usage from 5 to 10%. Very simple. Here's how much energy you're using right now. It just causes people to change. And we have lots of studies to prove that. What we've really seen though, with the advent of the smart home, is that we don't even need to rely on people to change anything anymore. We can have the machines talk to themselves. So really where we're focused our business is in connecting what's happening on the grid, what's happening with energy availability, and having those things in the home react to that. And we always say that the most important thing we're trying to control is the things that you don't see. So people say, well, are you going to shut off my TV while I'm watching my favorite show? I say, no, and your TV just doesn't take a lot of power anymore. But do you know when your hot water tank turned on today? Most people say, no, I have no idea my hot water tank's turned on. Exactly. And that's what we're trying to go after, is the energy that people can't see.
The flexible loads.
Exactly. So you have a lot of flexible loads, your thermal mass, all these things you can control, you can alter, you can do things a little bit sooner, a little bit later, and most people won't notice it happening. We think now that home consumer technology is so inexpensive that all you need to do is to really tie that into systems that have a bigger, greater picture of what's happening.
And what do you think the connection is to climate change?
Well, if you look at that, renewables are now becoming price parity with a lot of traditional fossil fuels.
We just talked about. Yeah.
So the problem is they're not as nice from an electricity generation standpoint.
Not as predictable nice,
okay?
Some people like surprises.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at it. Solar produces power when the sun shines. Wind produces power when the wind blows, and you can't control those things. So really it's a matter of trying to take how those things are producing power and be able to use that power when it's available. Because energy has to be used when it's generated, or it has to be stored somewhere.
We need storage, but I won't get into that right now.
So the easiest thing we can do is to simply look at that. So in California, at the middle of the day when the sun is shining, what you should be doing is heating everybody's hot water.
The problem is it's mostly natural gas heat.
It is. Well, but that's...
But there's a lot of pool pumps, and there's a lot of electric vehicles, and
yes,
there's a lot of AC.
There is.
And all of that can benefit from being used at the correct time.
Exactly, right? And so I think that's really where we see the big opportunities here, is in electricity generation, being able to move away from a lot of these fossil-fired plants that, frankly, are no longer economically viable. So they just need a little bit of an encouragement. And if the encouragement is to say, well, yeah, you know, you'll lose that very reliable coal plant you have running down the street, but in the long run, this is going to actually save you money as a generator if you replace it with some renewable generation. And we'll just make sure that all runs nicely and generation and consumption get aligned.
Early in your company's history, I had a device I think it's one of the early devices when I was at SDG&E, and I loved it. It was the first device that connected to the smart meter, I believe, and spoke Zigbee effectively and securely so that I could get my teams to approve it, like the security team and the data team. That was great. And then there was a way to have it sent to Bidgely that had an app that was free. Right. And so I would go into meetings, especially when I was trying to convince people that this was real, and I would show them my energy consumption at that moment in time, how much I was using right then and there. It was pretty exciting to be able to do that. And I also learned about surprises in my house that I was able to manage after that to make sure they were aligned with the rate I was on.
Yeah, and you know, we really kind of see that as the first step. Most people are frankly not aware of their energy usage. They've gotten bills from utility for decades, and it either goes higher or lower, but it's not contextualized for them, right? And one of the things we found that was really interesting, and we did actually a big study with Cal State San Marcos and participation with SDG&E, where we studied the human behavioral aspects. It was done with the psychology department of the university. And one of the things we found that was really interesting was how peer influence could have an effect on people's energy usage. So in that study, we had the users compare themselves to their neighbors in real time. So this wasn't a bill insert that said, hey, you're doing worse or better than your neighbors last month. This was someone that could say at this very moment, you are taking way more power than your neighbors. And that very simple indicator, because it has some much more powerful psychological effect, caused people to cut their usage by double of just showing them their own energy usage.
We did an experiment with Simple Energy where there was one family that almost stopped using energy in order to win. I think they were winning a volt at the time, so there was a really big incentive. For all I know, they went to a hotel.
Right.
But they said that they just reduced all their usage. But they really showed that gamification and what it could bring.
Yeah, and so it's been interesting, though, that we haven't found this mass adoption of that. And once I was told, and this maybe goes some regulatory sides, that, well, people really, the regulated utilities, frankly, don't want a 10% savings. They're regulated to do a 2% savings. So, and there was some discussion over, and I haven't really verified this, that having a lot of savings, if there wasn't the mechanisms to properly account for it, wasn't actually a desirable effect at the end of the day.
From my understanding, I'm just going to say, I guess a pro-utility thing might not be. I don't think they're worried about energy efficiency from let's not get too much. I think they're just fine with energy efficiency. They make their money, most utilities, based on putting iron in the ground, doing capital projects.
Of course, of course.
And so as long as they have renewables coming into the picture that are causing all kinds of issues, I think there's plenty of places where they really do need to invest. They have aging infrastructure. Definitely. So I think their profitability has a lot of channels. And I don't think that energy efficiency is that big a driver.
Right, right. Makes sense.
That's my opinion. It's just my opinion.
That's fair.
Welcome comments. So what was your background prior to Rainforest?
Yeah, so interesting. I have an electrical engineering background here from the University of British Columbia. I specifically focused on communications semiconductors. So to give you a little bit of background, when you go browse the internet, your traffic goes somewhere and it goes between servers. And that goes on these chips that are made by various different large companies like Cisco. And so I worked for one of the companies that are making these transport chips that stream huge amounts of data through the internet. And where that kind of ties into what we did at Rainforest is what we built was a way for different systems to communicate over different protocols and send data around. And really that's fundamentally what we're doing. We're communicating with different devices, with different protocols, putting them all together in a language that they can all understand each other, and communicating that back to consumers, utilities, and everybody else that's a player in this in this market. And so that's kind of how we, how I moved into this space. It was saying, well, huh, there's a lot of these things that don't really talk to each other. I know how to make things talk to each other. That's my background. How can I bring that knowledge of communications into this utility-focused home space?
I know being a CEO is difficult because there are good times and there are bad times. Can you talk about some of the more challenging times that you've had?
Yeah, for sure. I think as a CEO, probably money is something that comes up quite often, right? It is challenging to raise money, and then when you do raise money, it's challenging to raise more money because you need to continuously show increasing value and product and for your company. And so some of the bigger challenges have been in really continuing to bring in more and more cash into the business as we grow and expand. And sometimes you have things that are out of your control to some degree. So you may have a fundraising that's relying on a big deal coming in and you've signed the contract, it's ready to come in, and then something external happens that kills that. So in one case, and I can't get into specifics, we had a contract signed, it was gonna be something national, several million dollars, contract signed, gone through probably a year of procurement and everything else. And then the management of this organization changed. Our funding went away, this deal went away, and we had to go and find something else to get business with, right? So I think those are some of the bigger challenges, right? I mean, anybody can invent technology and sell it and do something
with
it.
Not anybody.
Well, all right. I feel that way. I think the challenges are really that there's so many other factors that aren't in your control that are going to cause your business to go into different directions. And those happen on, I'd almost say on a weekly basis. There's some sort of external factor that is going to have an effect on how you do stuff.
Technology alone is not enough, right?
No, it's not. I mean, you really have to, there's a lot of relationship building, and relationship building, especially in the utility space, sometimes takes years.
I was on both sides of that, so I'm well aware.
And that's the nature of the game. And we've even had a case of a utility spinning off a competitor to us. So
wow.
Your customer becoming a competitor,
yeah.
Not something we would have expected going into this game.
Tell me about some successes that you've had.
Yeah, you know, I think some of the bigger successes, I can talk about some of these because they are public, have been, for example, with the local utility here, BC Hydro. Now, they're originally supposed to roll out their smart meters in 2009. It didn't really start happening until 2014. So from a business perspective, we had to go find some other business. But fundamentally, their program was very well structured in the fact that what they wanted to do was deliver tangible benefits to their customers as from the smart meter rollout. And we did a fantastic program with them with our solutions, where we basically set up a store with rebates and everything else and got customers to go out and purchase things. So a lot of utility programs in the energy efficiency
wow.
demand response
yeah.
space focus on
giveaways. It's hard to give it away.
It's hard to give it away.
Yeah.
Over 6 months, we had over 10,000 people actually go and purchase
wow.
our products. And the success there was in the collaboration between us and the utility. We did, they were very proactive in looking at different marketing channels to get to the consumer. You know, they did everything. They tried some TV ads, newspaper placements and whatnot. And you know what we found worked best? Email. Email was not only most cost effective, but because they had already an email list of their customers, we found that customers actually value very much what their utility sends them. So that's not to say a customer necessarily loves their utility. They're two separate things. But if the utility presents the customer with something that says, hey, this can help lower your bill, customers will open it. We had 70% open rates on emails, 30% click-through rates, 5% buy rates
wow.
on a bulk email.
That's excellent
numbers.
Yeah,
which if any company could do that, they'd all be rich, right? You know, we're talking, things are usually less than 1% for any of those things.
But you take note if your utility is emailing you something. It doesn't happen that often.
Exactly. So that's what we found was fascinating with the model and actually the value that utilities have, in that I don't think they quite realize, as a general thing, Ed, how much of a thought leader they really are when it comes to energy programs. Because I think often they're being spun off to third parties who try to run programs for them. But even if you have Google email a user about energy efficiency stuff, they're still not going to get the same open rate as the utility themselves. And that's something that, I want to get that message out
there. Yeah, no, because I will help you to do that.
It's an incredible asset, right?
Yeah, I agree.
It's an incredible asset. And I think there's huge opportunities by really leveraging that asset going forward.
When I first asked about successes, you said you at least hinted that there were some that you could not talk about.
Right.
Big sale. So I don't want you to say something you can't say, but you are smirking right now. Smirk to laugh to cough. Okay. Yeah. So,
well, you know, there's
what can you say? What can you say?
There's some interesting things we're working on. Energy storage is a very interesting dynamic space. We're working on a few things, and it's something I mentioned to somebody. When you're making energy storage, batteries and whatnot, yeah, you're really good at converting AC to DC and DC to AC. That's great. But to create value on the grid, you have to have a system that's interconnected to other things in the home, properly interconnected to the utility, so that it can be a fully dynamic system. And I think there's a natural coupling between what rainforest does and energy storage providers out there for the two technologies to merge and something bigger to come out of it.
So, I won't make you say anything more.
So, you know, really incredible stuff I think happening in that space and big opportunities, but it's an early market, so time will tell, right?
What about a vision for the future?
Sure. I think electrification is in general a really big item that is going to have probably the biggest effect on climate change versus some of the other things that are being talked about. So if we look at that, that's really moving all sources of electricity generation and heating and other things to electric sources, and transportation being a large part of that as well. And so really I see that change happening in multiple different areas. Transportation, something with guys like Elon Musk in the market, which gets a lot of attention, and rightfully so, right? Electric vehicles, as we move over the next 5 to 10 years, again, become the cost will no longer be an issue as to choosing A or B. The performance is already better.
I've been driving electric since early 2011, and my wife a little bit after that, but I won't go back, but she certainly won't go back. She loves the control and the acceleration, the power.
Right. So we're already at that.
Yeah.
We're already at that point with transportation. I think we're going to get to that point with things like HVAC that's becoming big as far as heating people's homes, another huge user of producer of greenhouse gases. And so I think through heat pumps and other things like that, we're going to see that change and evolve again. And it's a matter of getting that, not only getting the technology out there, but evangelizing it a bit and getting into people's hands, so that the person that's coming to install your furnace will go, you know, I normally install these, but last month I learned about this, and you're going to save a lot of money by putting this in within,
right.
You know, 2-year ROI type of thing. And I think those are where we're going to start to get that next level of uptick, right? It's when you go into that car dealer, you go to people that you trust for services, and they're the ones saying, have you looked at this? I know you came and talked to me about this. Have you looked at this? We're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to one of the car dealerships here, they probably have no EVs on their lots.
Yeah.
If you go have somebody install a system at your house for your heating, he's probably going to install the same natural gas system that he installed last year and the year before and the year before that.
It's kind of exciting in San Diego because we have so many electric vehicles. Everywhere you look, you see them. I love that.
No, it's great, but it hasn't spread.
I know. It clouds what I think about the world.
It does, and I think we do suffer a little bit from what I call this isolated tech bubble, where people see the world only from their position of where they live. So Silicon Valley sometimes has this problem that they're like, oh yeah, everybody's doing this. And it's like, no, all your friends that live in San Francisco are doing this. That doesn't mean everybody's doing it, right? And I think it's a matter of spending a little bit more time out in the field, understanding why people do and don't do certain things, and then trying to adapt things for them. And I think that's the big change. So, to take into account our business, for example, we still sell this very simple in-home display product that if I brought to Silicon Valley, they'd actually laugh at it, and they have. The reason we haven't discontinued the product, we don't do development on it, but the reason we haven't discontinued it is because if you're a person who has not grown up with smartphone technology, and all you're looking at is for bill savings, to say, well, you can do all these fancy things with your house and automate and do all this, that's not the right sale for that person, and it's not going to allow them to have a meaningful impact on their bill, which will actually have a meaningful climate impact at the end of the day.
The right solution for the right customer.
Exactly. And so I think that's what I think is the key to really getting climate change to the next level, is what is the right solution for that person, that area at this time, and what's the right solution 10 years from now? If we can look at that, we'll put in the right stuff that'll make a difference.
So you talked about electrification in the future, now and in the future, and you just mentioned 10 years. How about 30 years? What does 30 years from now look like?
30 years from now, that's an interesting crystal ball.
You can punt if you want.
No, I'll take it. So, all right. So, 30 years from now, I think as far as transportation, I think we'll be a lot of people with not having personal vehicles anymore. I think we will go into an economy where there's a lot of autonomous vehicles driving people around. But I think mass transit will still become essential, because as you have all these vehicles driving around without anybody in them, that won't solve the traffic problems. Okay, so I think transportation, if we look at that kind of bubble in isolation, there's going to need to be still big mass transit investments, as well as in further investments in autonomous vehicles. But I just can't see people driving a gas-powered car 30 years from now as a normal thing. Nobody will do it. I'm just
like
saying
racetrack driving.
Yeah,
riding my special gas
car. Yeah, of course. Or hey, I'm going for the weekend, drive up to the mountains or something. Right. Sure. There's going to be, but it just won't make sense for a commuter. I think with respect to home technologies, it'll be very similar as well. And 30 years from now, I think this idea of interacting a lot with home technologies will finally be passed. I think we're in this intermediate period where people think that if I talk to things, if I communicate them on my smartphone, that's the future. But we actually don't see that as the future. We see the future as you just don't see technology. There's things that happen, but you just go about your life and don't need to make technology in your face.
You know, I just looked around the room to make sure there was no hockey puck device
before
I
saved it.
We unplugged it. But we're in a hotel right now for the week. And my wife and I both catch ourselves saying, Alexa, set timer for 9:30 p.m. And having it say, well, I can't set a timer for a specific time. I can set an alarm. Do you want me to do that?
Right.
Although now it does that automatically.
Now it's smart enough.
Now it's smart enough. Yeah.
So I do think some of these things about talking to stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of it's a transitionary technology, right? As far as figuring out when to turn on and off things, there'll be enough AI at that point that most things will be kind of figured out on its own, right?
Okay. Do you have any questions for me?
What's exciting you the most about technology with respect to climate change?
Just because of the sheer impact and the price point change, because I do think we need solar, I think Pi Energy has the potential to make it not free, but so much less than anything else that the conversation will be over.
Right.
So I am waiting for energy storage I've read about energy storage, little blurbs about cheap energy storage, but I haven't seen it with my own eyes for any evidence. I'm a believer that it could be out there. I just haven't seen it, and I want it to be out there. So that's what I'm hoping for. I've thought for a while that we need a way to make security more dependable. And I just recently saw this technology. Actually, I saw it many years ago, but now I'm seeing it where it's working at a reasonable price point. This company is able to entangle photons, which is really exciting because when you split entangled protons, those twins, each one will behave the exact same way. Mm-hmm. So this company is sending over fiber one of the photon twins with data and using the photon to decrypt it and using the photon they have to encrypt it. So you have this incredible point-to-point security that is pretty much unbreakable. That seems pretty exciting to me. I was pretty pumped to talk to them. Yeah, they are Quibitech in Vista, California. Yeah, very, very exciting stuff. I was impressed by that.
Cool.
Is there anything else you want to talk about, but I haven't given you the opportunity in the questions I've had?
Nothing I think about off the top of my head, no.
Okay, awesome. Then if it's okay, I'm going to wrap this up, but I'm going to do it with a rap.
Okay.
It's challenging to be a CEO of a startup. The glory is unsung, especially from a father that is so young. You talk to your friend, he got angry and started to boil because he started questioning the cost of oil. You want to make technology that can talk all to all. That's why you're focused on standard protocol. You had a contract fall through, that's one of your messes, but you've got a lot of secret ones. That's part of your successes. You think that there might be some storage and you might be the technology selected because we all know the value is when it's interconnected. Maybe cooking, maybe heating, certainly transportation. Certainly the world is moving till electrification. You want to help make decisions. Sisters talking to the brother. The only way to do that is to have everything talk to each other.
Nice.
I had to go all the way to Canada to meet with Chris, but it was a great discussion and I loved Vancouver. I guess I should have put Vancouver in the rap somehow. Here I am in Vancouver. The light rail's pretty cool to maneuver. Oh, probably best that I didn't. Remember, if you're in San Diego and want some great laughs, most nights I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv or both. To confirm specific dates, or if you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crivatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. If you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars, and tell your climate concerned friends about it. And if you know someone or you are a climate champion, please let me know. Chris is the co-founder, president, and CEO of Rainforest Automation. Their solutions provide residential power optimization by transforming consumer IoT devices into operational resources for energy providers. They connect the smart home with the smart grid, from energy storage to smart meters, enabling consumers to save money, help the grid, and optimize when they use energy. Engaging people by making it easy to do the right thing enables everyone to do their part to mitigate climate change.